Welcome to this podcast episode from the Oxford Dictionary of National Biography, published by Oxford University Press. This episode tells the story of the author, P.G. Wodehouse, best known for his Jeeves and Wooster novels. Having listened to this life, why not visit the dictionary online? The complete Oxford DMB includes the stories of 58,000 people from the Romans to the 21st century. Further details are available at oxforddmb.com. P.G. Wodehouse, 1881 to 1975. Author. Written by Ian Sproat. Pelham Grenville Wodehouse was born on the 15th of October 1881 at 50 Epsom Road, Guildford, Surrey, the third son of Henry Wodehouse and his wife, Eleanor Dean. The Wodehouse family traced its history back to the time of William the Conqueror. They were landed gentry who had over the years accumulated 18 knighthoods, a baronetcy, a barony, and an earldom. Pelham's father, Henry, had worked as a magistrate in Hong Kong from the 1860s. In 1883, his mother returned to England with her three sons, Peveril, Armin, and Pelham, and left them in charge of a governess in Bath, while she returned to Hong Kong. 3 years later, the brothers were sent to a school in Croydon, where they spent a further 3 years, followed by a spell at Elizabeth College in Guernsey. In 1891, Pelham, or Plum, as he was known from an early age, attended Malvern House Prep School in Kent. From here, in 1894, he won a scholarship to Dulwich College in South London. Wodehouse's 6 years at Dulwich were amongst the happiest of his life, and he remained in love with the place all his days. He was a gifted athlete, footballer, cricketer and boxer, had a fine voice and sang at school concerts and edited the school magazine. Despite the fact that he rarely saw his parents between the ages of 2 and 15, Wodehouse described his childhood as a very happy one. During the holidays, he lived mainly with aunts and uncles. Aunts, of whom Wodehouse possessed no fewer than 20, played an important part in his early life and appeared in his later novels, featuring the characters Bertie Wooster and his manservant, Jeeves. The schemes and machinations of ruthless aunts are frequently the engines of his plots, typically schemes which a reluctant Bertie is compelled to carry out. The power that the aunts wield was clearly based on Wodehouse's own experiences. Wodehouse also possessed 15 uncles, 4 of whom were Church of England clergymen. They too provided inspiration for his pious but fallible curates, vicars and bishops, of which he wrote with friendly irreverence but without mockery. Wodehouse's brother, Armin, had won a classical scholarship to Oxford University, and Plum was expected to do the same. He was a good classical scholar, composing Greek and Latin verse as easily as English. But his father's pension was paid in rupees, and when the value of the rupee fell, he could not afford to send Plum to university. On leaving Dulwich, Wodehouse worked for 2 years in the Hong Kong and Shanghai Bank in London, but was utterly a fish out of water. In the evenings in his rented room, however, he wrote short stories, novels, poems, humorous articles, and journalism. During this time, he had 80 items published in various magazines, this being only a small part of what he wrote, submitted, and had rejected. In September 1902, aged 20, Wodehouse gave up his job at the bank and became a full-time writer. 9 days later, his first book, The Pot Hunters, a public school story, was published. Over the next 7 years, he produced 6 more books of school life, as well as 5 other books of apprentice work. Each of Wodehouse's school stories is a superior example of the genre and still readable, but in his last public school novel, Mike, published in 1909, something extraordinary happened. Wodehouse, as a writer, moved into a higher and dazzling sphere. In his dialogue, characterization, and ability to create sunny laughter, Mike is Wodehouse's first masterpiece. George Orwell, for instance, called it perhaps the best light school story in the English language. Of his own books, it was Woodhouse's favourite. It also introduced one of his most memorable characters, Smith, spelt P-S-M-I-T-H, the letter P being added by Smith himself, but not pronounced, who was the central figure in Smith in the City, 1910, and Leave It to Smith, 1923. Woodhouse's Smith was unstoppably talkative and had a splendid conversational line in Mandarin orotundity. Leave It to Smith, which was set in Blanding's castle, coincided with another successful Woodhouse series. There are 11 novels in the Blanding sequence, beginning with Something Fresh in 1915 and finishing, 60 years later, with Sunset at Blanding's, which Woodhouse was halfway through when he died. Something Fresh was Woodhouse's first bestseller, and also the first of his books that was almost wholly a farce. From then on, almost every novel and short story he wrote was in this form. At the heart of the Blanding stories is Lord Emsworth, the ninth Earl, a widower, amiable, but boneheaded. His greatest joy is his pig, the zeppelin-shaped Empress of Blandings, outright winner of the Fat Pigs class at the Shropshire Agricultural Show 3 years in succession. Lord Emsworth's favourite outdoor activity is leaning over the Empress's sty, watching her guzzle her food, and his favourite indoor activity is sitting alone in his library reading and rereading that epic volume, The Care of the Pig, by Whiffle. In his attempts to lead his quiet life, Emsworth is endlessly frustrated by his bossy sister, Lady Constance, by his efficient but obnoxious secretary, Rupert Baxter, his dour head gardener, whose ambition is to turn that elegant Blanding's grounds into a public park, and by his son, Freddie, who is dubbed the family curse. His only reliable ally is Beach, the butler, a stately procession of one, with his pop eyes and his fruity voice, described as being like tawny port made audible. In 1904, P.G. Woodhouse made his first visit to the United States, spending 17 days in New York. 5 years later, he sailed again to New York, this time staying for 10 months, and in the next 4 years, he shuttled to and fro across the Atlantic. In 1914, Woodhouse arrived in New York 2 days before the First World War began. Aged 33, he had tried to enlist in the armed forces in Britain before he sailed for America, but had been rejected because of his bad eyesight. He tried to enlist in the USA in 1917, but was again rejected. The day after Woodhouse arrived in America, he met an Englishwoman, Ethel Wayman, already twice widowed and with a daughter, Leonora. In September 1914, he and Ethel married. It proved a successful marriage for 60 years. Ethel was an attractive, lively, strong-minded, gregarious woman who took charge of Woodhouse's life and made certain that he had the peace and quiet needed to write. Woodhouse came to love his stepdaughter, Leonora, and officially adopted her. He never got over her sudden death in 1944. The couple had no children of their own. For Woodhouse, the most important event of the First World War in professional terms was his work with Guy Bolton and Jerome Kern in the American Theatre. The trio of Kern as composer, Bolton as playwright and librettist, and Woodhouse as lyricist revolutionised American musical comedy in works such as Sitting Pretty and Cabaret Girl. In doing so, they moved it away from the tired formulas of Viennese operetta, injecting colloquial wit and vigour, and making fortunes for themselves. The high point was the song Bill, with lyrics written by Woodhouse in 1917 and used by Kern in Showboat. In 1917, the trio had 5 shows running simultaneously on New York's Broadway, a feat never achieved before or since. 1917 also saw the appearance of Woodhouse's 2 best-known characters, Bertie Wooster and his factotum, Jeeves. Although at this point Jeeves had only 2 lines in a short story entitled Extricating Young Gussie. But what followed was a partnership that spanned 14 novels and 2 short stories, and which ended with a final novel, Aunts Aren't Gentlemen, in 1974. The master-servant relationship provided the framework for Woodhouse's comedy. Bertie is good-hearted but weak-willed, and almost guaranteed to make a hash of any scheme he takes in hand. Jeeves, by contrast, is omniscient, superbly efficient, and loyal to Bertie. Their dialogue with each other and the linking narrative by Bertie are among the glories of English literature. Woodhouse was a good classical scholar at school, and that early linguistic discipline shows itself in the clarity and precision of his writing. The plots themselves, strong and beautifully crafted, provided much of the comedy, and within the plots are scores of vivid and varied characters, funny in themselves and the cause of funniness in others. Bertie's tall, beaky Aunt Agatha, who eats broken bottles and wears barbed wire next to the skin. Gussie Finknottle, newt fancier, teetotaler and orange juice addict. Madeline Bassett, the soppy girl with whom Gussie is hopelessly in love. Roderick Spode, would-be British dictator, leader of the so-called Black Shorts, whose piercing eyes can open an oyster at 10 paces. And finally, the dog, Bartholomew, an opinionated and irascible Aberdeen terrier whose growling and snapping once keep Bertie and Jeeves marooned on top of a wardrobe. Between the wars, Woodhouse's life settled into a happy and prosperous pattern. He commuted regularly between Britain and the United States, and in the 1930s he added France as a country of residence in order to minimise legally the amount of tax he paid to the British and American governments. His short stories and novels were often serialised, which brought him extra income before they were then published as books. In total, he wrote 96 books, among them Thank You, Jeeves, which appeared in an American magazine in 1933 for £50,000, and the following year was published as a book selling some 3 million copies during Woodhouse's life. His earning power in the 1930s, also generated from song lyrics, he wrote 250 lyrics for 30 musical comedies, plays, 15 in all, and film scripts, a total of 44, was considerable. When the Second World War began, the Woodhouses were living in northern France. They and a small group of neighbours tried twice to escape from the German advance in May 1940, but on both occasions, vehicles in which they were travelling broke down. They were captured. Woodhouse was interned as an enemy alien, first in Belgium and then in a camp at Tost, Upper Silesia, where he wrote most of his novel Money in the Bank. In June 1941, less than 4 months short of his 60th birthday, he was freed. The Germans automatically freed all civilian internees aged 60 or over, and was taken to Berlin. There, he was tricked into making 5 humorous broadcasts on German radio of wholly innocent content to the United States, then not at war, about his experiences as a prisoner. The Woodhouses lived in Germany under supervision for just over 2 years, in Berlin during the winters and for the rest of the year with friends in the Harz Mountains and at Lobnitz near Upper Silesia. In September 1943, they were allowed to move to Paris, where they stayed under supervision at the Hotel Bristol. In September 1944, after the liberation of Paris, an investigation into Woodhouse's broadcasts and subsequent actions was carried out by the British Intelligence Service, MI5. Woodhouse was now reviled in the United Kingdom as a traitor, collaborator, Nazi propagandist, and a coward. It was widely believed that he had agreed to thank the Nazis for his release by broadcasting, and for the rest of the war he had lived in luxury at Nazi expense. As a result, some public libraries removed his books from their shelves. However, not a single one of the charges against him was true. The MI5 investigation, tragically for Woodhouse not made public in his lifetime, found no evidence of treachery. Further evidence, collected after Woodhouse's death, from both British and German sources, wholly confirm his innocence and patriotism. The German investigation made it clear beyond doubt that Woodhouse had never asked to be released from internment, had no idea that he was going to be released until the hour it happened, had never sought and never received any special favours from the Germans and had never made anti-British or pro-Nazi statements. The German authorities had received strong pleas from influential American individuals and organisations to release Woodhouse, and the Germans believed that by acceding to these pleas, they would show how sensitive Germany was to American opinion and thus reinforce American neutrality in the war. Woodhouse personally believed in the first instance that the British and American public would admire him for what he said in his broadcasts, because he showed that throughout his internment he had remained cheerful and, in the words of Bertie Wooster, kept a stiff upper lip. This, however, was not the end to the controversy surrounding Woodhouse during the war. In 1999, the UK's National Archives released papers from the files of the Foreign Office and the Ministry of Defence concerning documents discovered by the German Embassy in Paris. These previously secret papers contained references to Woodhouse's being paid money by the Germans for what looked like services rendered. The references, widely publicised in the British media, appeared to reopen the case against Woodhouse. And yet, while the various sums of money listed seemed to be new evidence, this was not the case. Woodhouse did not receive any payments from the German embassy. All the sums mentioned in the documents had already been listed and explained in the financial statements given to an MI5 investigator by Woodhouse in September 1944. However, because the money was described in different ways in different currencies, it was not clear at first that the sums were those already explained as innocent in Woodhouse's statement. The files show that by 1947, the British authorities had concluded that Woodhouse had no case to answer over either the broadcasts or the money. And in the words of the Foreign Office, Mr. Woodhouse made the celebrated broadcasts in all innocence and without any evil intent. After the Second World War, P.G. Woodhouse lived in the United States, becoming an American citizen in 1955. He retained British nationality, but never returned to the United Kingdom. He wrote a further 34 novels, collections of short stories, and three volumes of a semi-autobiography, published in the 1950s, Performing Flea, Bring on the Girls, and Over 70. He and Ethel lived quietly, while Plum attended the annual dinners of old boys at Dulwich College in New York, gave money to animal charities, and reread the whole of Shakespeare each year. Physically, Woodhouse was tall, broad-shouldered, and athletic. In character, he was quiet, modest, polite, affable, steady, straightforward, and generous to friends, particularly those down on their luck, but shy with strangers. He was a kind man, and although he was not someone to be pushed around, his dislike of hurting others occasionally led him to acquiesce when he should not. Although shrewd in personal relations and in the commercial details of his personal life, he never lost a certain schoolboyish simplicity and innocence. By the standards of the time, Woodhouse was a moderate conservative in his views. His creative genius as a writer was founded on a rigorous classical education, wide reading, and unrelaxing discipline and hard work. P.G. Woodhouse died on the 14th of February 1975 at Southampton Hospital, Long Island, New York, and was buried on Long Island 4 days later. 6 weeks earlier, he had been knighted, a symbolic honour, just in time. The National Archives files, made public in August 2002, show that the British government had repeatedly denied Woodhouse a knighthood. Writing in 1967, for example, Sir Patrick Dean, then British ambassador in the United States, felt that the honour would revive the controversy of his wartime behaviour and give currency to a Bertie Wooster image of the British character, which the embassy was doing its best to eradicate. In 1971, Dean's successor supported this view, but despite opposition within his own party, the Labour Prime Minister Harold Wilson at last ensured that Woodhouse was honoured. In 1934, the poet Hilaire Belloc, then near the height of his reputation, had astonished the literary and academic worlds by calling P.G. Woodhouse the best writer of English now alive, the head of my profession. Woodhouse did not take this seriously, but Max Beerbohm, Rudyard Kipling and A.E. Housman, to take three other disparate literary heavyweights, also acknowledged Woodhouse's greatness. Not everyone agreed, of course. Indeed, F.R. Leavis, one of the most influential critics of his generation, regarded Woodhouse with contempt, calling his work stereotyped humour. The melancholy affair of Woodhouse's wartime broadcasts did nothing to increase his general standing in the immediate post-war years. But by the 1960s, the tide had turned. To commemorate Woodhouse's birthday in 1961, his American publishers paid for a large and laudatory advertisement in the New York Times, signed by many distinguished writers, including Evelyn Waugh, who described Woodhouse as the master. By the opening years of the 21st century, Woodhouse's reputation was higher than it ever had been. The consensus in the academic world is that Woodhouse was indeed a great writer, the views of Leavis and his followers having not endured. His books have also remained commercially successful. Two leading British publishers, Dent and Penguin, marked the new millennium by embarking on the publication, one in hardback, the other in paperback, of the entire Woodhouse canon. Woodhouse titles were now also included in the Penguin Classics list, and he has been translated into over 30 languages. Jeeves and Wooster, the television series made in the 1990s with Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie in the eponymous roles, remains one of the most frequently repeated comedies on television. By the early 21st century, 10 countries around the world had their own Woodhouse Society. In Britain, the Labour Prime Minister of the day, Tony Blair, declared himself a devotee, as did his Liberal predecessor, Herbert Asquith, and became a patron of the UK Woodhouse Society. The judgment of the year since his death confirmed that Woodhouse was a great writer of English prose, and the greatest of all English humorists. Having listened to this life of P.G. Woodhouse, why not visit the Oxford DMB online at oxforddmb.com. Here you'll find 150 free podcast episodes, as well as biographies of thousands of interesting people who shaped all aspects of British history.